following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Okay, welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and we're glad you could tune in today. Hope you find the content to be of value. I want to remind you, as we do every week, that just because you hear us discuss a topic of interest to you, whether it's a tax strategy, a real estate private partnership opportunity, etc., that you should not rush out and dive into the deep end, so to speak, but consult with your existing advisors, make sure that you understood the strategy, it applies to your facts and circumstances, etc., before taking action. And moreover, the concept of taking it easy when you start looking at the voluminous document stacks that come with investing or the tax code is something best left to professionals. And in our case, we're not giving tax advice or investment advice here on the air. We don't ever give investment advice. We do give tax advice if you're a client, or we're doing some planning for you. And as far as the opportunities, like a private placement memorandum that we may comment about from time to time, we're simply trying to help our clients and listeners at a higher level. We don't talk specific project names, etc., but we're just trying to help you understand the math for what you're looking at, might be signing up for, so that you understand what to expect. And of course, we're not magicians. We don't read the future. We are accountants. So we try to tell you what we see with regard to the pro forma information or the assumptions valid, or the interest rates being presumed in the ballpark, or the rental growth rates appropriate, the absorption rate in the market. We look at data on a market and submarket basis. Like, for instance, the market might be Houston, submarket might be Clear Lake or West Houston or Greens Point. So we're again opining about the math of prospective projects. A lot going on in the news. In fact, today it looks like I've gotten at least a dozen articles in that are relevant to content. There's a lot of distress in the debt market, as you may be aware, and we keep talking about how there, at one time here recently, even there was approximately $650 to $700 billion loans that were in, they were on watch lists. I don't want to say they were necessarily in deep distress, but there was some distress, or they wouldn't have made the watch list. And those loans have to be refinanced in most cases near term. And I guess I should say, I may have my list confused. Perhaps the $700 billion is the amount of debt that has to be refinanced, of which a significant portion is in distress, and it may be unlikely that those loans can find a home. So what you're going to see, what we're already starting to see, is opportunities to buy those distressed assets at prices that would be below your typical cost basis in a normal market, normal transaction. So it creates opportunities. And it's like we've said many times, there's people making money in the down market, and there's people making money in the up market. And you know, your challenge is to make sure you're on the correct trajectory, depending on which variable, which math, you know, we ought to, or we're taking a look at. Let's see here. I was looking at a couple of these articles, and we will talk about, let's see, cities. Here's one that I think is relevant. Cities impacted by mortgage rates. There's 10 cities on this article that was out on, let's see, this came in from Globestreet.com, and let's see what they're saying. There's 10 cities poised to benefit. This is from their multifamily research group. However, they're talking about residential, I guess, generally, because they do mention the word home owners, owner occupied homes. So cities with a high number of owner occupied homes with a mortgage may be most affected by the falling mortgage rates. Mortgage rates on home loans are likely to stay in the low 6% range for the rest of the year, perhaps falling to the high 5% range in the spring of 2025, according to a new analysis by Realtor.com. Realtor.com, as you might suspect, seems to take any chance they can to promote the fact that rates are getting more attractive. So I'm not sure. I know in the short term they have gone down. I know longer term they could easily go back up if we continue to get inflation reports like the one I believe we had today. If I'm not mistaken, it was not what we expected. It was not falling. Not that the interest rates are connected at the hip with inflation, but it sure is a strong corollary, you might say. But in any event, the Fed's announced half of 1% rate cut in September raised hopes that lower mortgage rates would make homes more affordable for would-be home buyers and perhaps encourage others reluctant to move on because the cost of a new mortgage would be higher than their current payment to re-enter the market. The Realtor.com study suggests that markets that have a high percentage of owner-occupied homes with a mortgage are likely to be more positively or most positively affected by lower rates. Kind of common sense. Metros with the highest rates of owner-occupied homes with a mortgage were led by Washington, D.C. Metro, Washington, D.C. Metro, Denver, Raleigh, Virginia Beach, Portland, Oregon, Baltimore, Seattle, Atlanta, Indianapolis, and San Diego. So I guess, well, a lot of that seems like common sense, but I'll leave it to them to keep commenting on the trends. We all would like to see the interest rates come down. I just, you know, don't know that the media or the press. I think they're less than a little bit sincere. A lot of times it's a lot of want to more than the data. And it's amazing to me, well, maybe not, how frequently we can get an article about a certain topic that says one thing and then another article, sometimes on the same news reporting platform, will say the opposite. Market rates continue to exceed current rates for most homeowners, keeping them locked in golden handcuffs, quote unquote. As mortgage rates decline, real estate sales activity is expected to pick up in these areas. Again, rather commonsensical in my opinion. The question is how older homeowners will respond. Age and high homeownership rates also create more insulated markets, the report commented, noting a strong correlation between a larger proportion of older homeowners, age 65 and above, and the prevalence of outright home ownership. These owners have had more years to benefit from both home value appreciation and accumulated equity in their homes. Okay, well, that's a good point to make, and that's probably not all that obvious to the casual layperson. Both issues there, you know, they've had more years to run the value up, or I'm going to say the inflation has run the value up. It's interesting how, you know, people are actually not getting a gain, even though it seems like it, and they get taxed as if they are, if they have too much of a gain. And as I heard former President Donald Trump today, he was speaking in front of the Detroit, I think it was the Detroit Economic Forum or some name like that. And he said, yeah, back when I was president, inflation was very low. When you had a gain on a sale of real estate, it was actually a gain, real gain, as opposed to just getting your money back, you know, from the inflationary effect. But in any event, metros with the highest share of owner-occupied homes without a mortgage include New Orleans, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Miami, Tampa, Detroit, Birmingham, Houston made that list, Oklahoma City, and Cleveland, Ohio. So, again, a couple points there that were worth taking a look-see. Let's go ahead and take our first break. We'll circle back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at nprawls.com, Nathan at nprawls.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
In Texas, the power to change our laws belongs to you, the people, not to the lawyers and the judges. I'm Justice Jimmy Blacklock, and on the Texas Supreme Court, my job is to enforce our Constitution as it is written, not to rewrite it myself. As a husband, a father, and a sixth-generation Texan, I understand the importance of preserving for future generations the many blessings we enjoy in this beautiful state God has given us. My commitment to you is to work hard, apply the law fairly and equally, and uphold the constitutional rights of all Texans. Governor Greg Abbott appointed me, and he continues to endorse me because he knows I will faithfully defend our Constitution. I ask you to join me in preserving our constitutional heritage and seeking God's continued blessing on our beloved state of Texas. With your support, I'll continue protecting your rights, and together we'll keep Texas strong and free for your family and for mine. Political ad paid for by the Jimmy Blacklock Campaign.
Plumbing emergencies never happen at a convenient time. Usually they happen on the weekends, holidays, or while you're away on vacation. I'm Richard Saad, president of Nix Plumbing. When you find yourself facing a plumbing emergency, call the licensed and experienced professionals at Nix Plumbing and Sewer Services. Nix Plumbing has been Houston's first choice for all your plumbing needs since 1979. Our experts can take your most difficult plumbing issues and fix them fast, fix them right, and usually for less than you'd expect. Nix Plumbing and Sewer Services is the right choice for any plumbing job, from a leaky faucet, whole house repipe, or a complete sewer line replacement. You can count on Nix Plumbing to do the job right. With over 40 years in business and over 150,000 satisfied customers, Nix wants to be your plumbing company. Nix Plumbing offers free estimates and free second opinions. Call Nix Plumbing and Sewer Services, 713-868-9907, or visit us on the web, nixplumbing.com.
MPL 38548.
Call Nix Plumbing today. We're on the way.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and we were talking just before the break about the current cities in America where it appears single family market may have some opportunity to break the logjam. I know it's happening in some cities, but it's typically the cities where we've got more homes that have been purchased in the recent past where people want to try to get out of some of the higher debt mortgages. The thing we continue to see are people that either own their home outright or have low interest rates are still not seeing interest rates that they want to transact their existing home to get into a new loan at such a higher rate. But there has been a little bit more synchronization in terms of that dynamic. And I know here in San Antonio, where I'm at for the moment, there's some sales that look like that are starting to come back around. But the market definitely paused for about the last 9 months to a year. I want to talk about, since we're right on the cusp of an election, I wanted to just mention some of the consequences around the country. You know, different states and I guess even cities have ballot initiatives that could affect the landlord-tenant market, even commercial real estate. But the article, and this again was in Globe Street, came in a week or so ago, 2024 election impact on CRE, or commercial real estate, from housing and warehousing to landlords and leasing, new caps, controls, and ballot measures up for vote could significantly change the commercial real estate landscape. Elections have consequences, and this year's vote will be no exception for the CRE industry, commercial real estate. Voting outcomes will shape important policy matters that impact this high-stakes sector beyond 2024. Brokers at Kidder Matthews, the largest fully independent commercial real estate firm in the U.S., weigh in on some of the issues that are on future ballots. Housing on the ballot is the first category. Most agree that housing affordability is a major concern, with the nation facing an estimated shortage of 4.5 million homes. This election, several jurisdictions will put forward measures aimed at addressing this issue. California's Proposition 33, the, quote, Justice for Renters, end quote, Act, would allow local governments to expand rent control, giving cities the right to undo vacancy decontrol. Many property owners and investors have long argued that rent control inhibits new supply and hinders property upgrades. This would significantly impact property values, as landlords would be unable to raise rents on vacant units to market rates, according to David Evans, one of the senior associates at Kidder Matthews, Los Angeles office. If I were president for a day, Evans adds, I would require any state or local municipality receiving federal funds for housing to remove rent caps for owners who renovate or otherwise improve their existing multifamily units. Yeah, good luck with that in some of these states. In L.A., Executive Directive 1, which expedites approvals of affordable housing projects, has boosted much-needed volume. Executive Directive 1 is what's boosted the volume. Yet, project scale and other building concerns have led to stricter limits from the mayor's office, prompting a familiar objection from commercial real estate professionals. The proposed changes would lower the max buildable units and potentially require developers to pay builders prevailing wage rates that would disincentivize new residential development. Oh, so there's some capitalism involved, apparently. The things that the politicos legislators consistently overlook, because many of them, some of them have business experience, but many of them don't. And so they don't think about the significant details of promoting, as an example, building 3 million new homes. I'll promise you, the people that are promoting that program, namely Ms. Harris, who's running for president, she's never in her life had a business, small, large, or otherwise. She has no idea. And most of her progressive staff doesn't have an idea. And so it's a pipe dream, typically. And even if they could get them built, who's going to pay for the ongoing? You know, they talk about these upfront incentives. Well, you've still got to have people that can afford to make the payments, pay the insurance, pay the property taxes. You're a long way from the finish line, is what I'm trying to say. But back to the article. In Seattle, Initiative 137, or in Seattle, Initiative 137 would fund affordable social, quote-unquote, housing development through a 5% marginal tax on employers paying workers more than $1 million annually. So if you're paying any of your workers, I guess this is a total, this article doesn't say it, but I think they're trying to say if you're more than just maybe a small custom home builder, if you're paying workers more than $1 million annually, then they're going to put they call it a marginal tax. Sounds like a penalty tax. And if it's passed in February 2025, this would generate over $50 million annually for Seattle's Social Housing Public Development Authority. Boy, a government agency at the city level focused on social housing. Seattle, this is a quote, Seattle should not discourage large employers with high compensation packages from locating or remaining here, said Jeff Huntington, first VP and shareholder at Kidder Matthews. The city needs to do more to attract and retain those companies, not push them away. Well, I tell you what, that's going to be a painful lesson that the progressives are going to learn, not just in the housing market, but I got a feeling it's going to be similar in some of the green initiatives, including the EV move. They're going to mandate EV even when there's not enough infrastructure to accommodate EV, and there's going to be a train wreck, literally, with there not being enough infrastructure to travel consistently and in a pervasive fashion, you know, not just to a big city. In 2023, high housing costs spurred Oregon to the country's third most expensive place to live. There need to be incentives for developers to build more affordable housing, not minimums and in lieu fees that never make it back to helping low-end individuals efficiently or effectively, said one of the Kidder Matthews. Boy, I've got Kidder Peabody on my brain. Kidder Matthews, senior VP and shareholder in Portland. California commercial concerns. There are several ballot measures as well as several bills recently signed into law in California that will impact the commercial real estate landscape. All of these, there's four or five they list here, are viewed by many in the commercial real estate industry as an anti-warehousing bill. California AB 98 was signed recently by Governor Newsom. It places more restrictions on new and expanded logistics development, including replacing any homes removed for development at a 2-to-1 ratio, not allowing trucks to drive on any streets that would be considered residential, and requiring a buffer of 300 to 500 feet of any sensitive receptors. The bill was signed with limited input from the commercial real estate industry, which had previously expressed concerns about earlier versions of the legislation. In my opinion, AB 98 will have a significant impact on industrial commercial real estate in California, says one of Kidder Matthews' regional presidents. Not only will the added financial burdens on the supply chain ultimately hurt consumers, the very group that these policies aim to help, but by limiting future supply and growing demand, rents will likely climb and ultimately result in increased consumer cost. Unfortunately, that happens far too often. On a more positive note, Newsom signed into law AB 2904, the first bill proposed and sponsored by the NAIOP, a National Commercial Real Estate Development Organization, which extends some zoning changes, the notice period for such changes. The new law will allow property owners more time to prepare for pending revisions. Well, that's just a smattering of some of the changes that are up, potentially going to occur because they're up for votes during the near-term election period. I want to find another article that is especially noteworthy now with the significant damages we've sustained from weather-related damage or events. And the title is Sustained Weather Damage? Expect insurance rate hikes of 50 to 100%. And if you don't think that's likely, just look back in time where we've had, you know, 30% hikes in certain years in the multifamily market. And these types of hike would exacerbate the fact that insurance currently is approximately 8% of operating expenses for multifamily properties. That is a huge jump over the historical level of the insurance expenditure each year, and it's looks like it's going to get worse. And you might think, well, it's only going to affect the markets where there's hurricanes. That's not necessarily the way insurance works. But anyway, let's just run through a few of the points here, and then we're going to take our last break, and we'll be back here in a few minutes. But the article says that between $8 billion and $14 billion, with a best estimate of $11 billion, is Moody's RMS event responses projection. I believe that's related to the data gathering that Moody's rating agency does. But anyway, the projection for the total U.S. private market insured losses just from Hurricane Eileen, I hear it pronounced. I've heard, I guess Eileen is the way it's typically pronounced. That was before Hurricane Milton, which saw a rapid intensification that was one of the most extreme ever recorded, according to Everstream Analytics. However, it landed in Florida as a Category 3, a serious risk, but far better than the Category 4 or 5 that experts had predicted. But let's find some numbers here. So it's not just hurricanes, tornadoes, wildfires, droughts, winter storms, flooding, earthquakes, and heat waves. Figures that the insurance Information Institute has compiled on U.S. natural catastrophe, I think they meant an S on that, catastrophes, estimated insurance or insured losses run as follows. 2010 was $13.6 billion, 2011, $35.8 2012 was $579 million. 2013 was $12.8 billion. 2014 was $15.3 billion. Skipping over to 2016, $23.8 billion, another big number. $78 billion the following year, $52 billion. $25 billion, $74 billion. Those are some big numbers. There's some variation in that lineup, but the trend line is increasing. A report from insurance brokerage Marsh McLennan Agency said that commercial property insurance rates have seen year-over-year increases across 24 consecutive quarters, and that rate increases averaged 11% at the end of 2023. Pretty big number. High magnitude catastrophic losses have endured challenges, or the enduring challenges of the pandemic on the supply chain, fluctuations in the employment market, and rising inflation have banded together to create a perfect storm, no pun intended, that threatens the sustainability of every property portfolio. Well, again, I think we could, even without knowing the specifics on what's occurred, we could guess that insurance rates are going up. They rarely go the other way, but in any event. Well, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our last break. We'll circle back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And let's talk Roth conversions for the final segment. We'll come right back momentarily.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Need AC, plumbing, or electrical service? Call John Moore.
Call John. Get more. 730-2525.
Beautiful and healthy trees do increase your property value, but the key word here is healthy. Sick, ugly trees will actually decrease the value of your home. That's why I recommend you call Lewis Flory with Ability Tree Experts at 281-441-4179. They can spot insect and disease problems the average person will never see. They will make sure your trees are properly pruned to allow sunlight and fresh air into the canopy and allow strong winds to blow through instead of damaging your tree. Call Lewis Flory today. That's 281-441-4179. Ability Tree Experts, Houston's leading tree care professionals.
Let's be honest. No one ever thinks about their garage until it stops working. The problem is, worn-out springs, cables, and rollers can break before they give any sign of trouble. Don't wait until a simple garage door repair becomes a major problem. If your garage is noisy, if bugs are getting in, or if it struggles to open, your garage door is in need of repairs. Recommended all over Houston, Garage Door Doctor is your trusted partner for all your garage door needs. Every time your garage door opens and closes, there is wear and tear taking place. If not properly serviced each year, a simple fix could turn into a costly repair. Let the experts at Garage Door Doctor tune up your garage door and keep it running for a lifetime. The Garage Door Doctor motto, honest, quality work at a fair price, isn't just words. It's the Garage Door Doctor promise. Because when you're with Garage Door Doctor, you're family. We never employ subcontractors to do our work. Our staff, including our own family members, will treat your garage as their own. Schedule an appointment today at garagedoordoctor.biz or call today.
Tucker was born with an adventurous spirit and on the surface looked like he was living his best life. My son was training for a triathlon, struggling with sleep and anxiety. He purchased one illicit pill on social media and that pill took his life. Fentanyl is taking a whole generation of brilliant minds. If you don't receive medication from a pharmacy, count that it has fentanyl.
Visit OnePillKillsTX.com, sponsored by HHSC.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and fake cheese. And there are many just like me.
With big dreams and faded tears.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. This is our final segment, and I wanted to take these last, what do we have here, about 10 minutes, and talk about one of my favorite topics, which is a self-directed 401 trust, specifically the Roth component side of the plan. And a lot of people are familiar now, seems like, versus several years back, that there even was a Roth part of a 401k plan. And most employers, larger employers, have those now. I'd say probably 80 to 85% of the big company plans have it. And if you're not taking advantage of that, well, you probably should be. I use this tool more so for people that are investors in passive multifamily real estate projects, and the way we value those ownership interests is very advantageous for purposes of being able to pay lesser tax on the conversion. And you know, if you're on the other hand investing simply in market securities and stocks, bonds, you know, mutual funds, that sort of thing, It's still something you should look at very seriously, because when you look at what's coming, and for those of you that aren't aware of what's coming, you might want to take a look at David McKnight, the author of The Power of Zero. You might want to take a look at that book. It's several years old now, but the message is even more relevant since the deficit has gone up. And by the way, what is our national debt gone up to? And we're talking about just the part that we're okay with recognizing it now. We don't talk about the part that doesn't affect this current budget cycle, but the U.S. national debt as of this moment is $35,692,184,000,000 and some change. It's changing real time as I'm sitting here looking at the usdebtclock.org site. It's an amazing site. It's looks like a pinball machine, the way they've got it colored, and all the numbers are moving to reflect up to the second data, or most of the numbers are moving. So $35.75 trillion dollars. And how much is that per taxpayer, you might be wondering? $271,188 versus the amount per citizen, every man, woman, and child, whether you're a taxpayer or not, is at $105,000. It's sickening. And you know, when you look at the largest four budget components of our annual spending, in the number one spot is Medicare, Medicaid combined. When you look, and that's $1.8 trillion and some change. Social Security's next at $1.482 trillion, so almost a trillion and a half. And defense has been third largest in the out of the four biggest budget components at $933 billion to date. And now, though, interest expense on the public debt has surpassed the defense expenditure. It's hard to believe. $964,457,000,000 and change and counting. It's insane. And so that means it's the third most prolific budgetary component, according to the Congressional Budget Office, otherwise known as CBO, when they issued their 10-year forecast, and I think they've updated it a couple times this year. The 10-year forecast out in 2034 will have interest expense, that's the interest we're paying on our borrowing, will be in the number one slot in terms of the most material, the largest budgetary components. So if you don't understand what I mean when you say it, when I say a tax train is coming, that's what I mean. We are collecting about, just, you know, give or take, $5 trillion a year in tax receipts. We're spending $7 trillion, give or take. And you can't do that indefinitely, because you eventually run out of either the ability to borrow, which is where we're headed. We've managed to consume most of the annual tax collections with mandatory provisions, spending provisions, like indexed issues like Social Security, Medicare, things that are mandatory. There's no discretion. So the discretionary part of the U.S. budget is the smallest piece, and we will have spent the rest of that. We'll have blown through that limit unless some change takes place, and I mean systemic policy changes takes place soon, because we'll be through that mark in 2028 to 2030 time frame. So we've got precious few years to get a grip and try to figure out how we're going to slow the tax drain. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem like most of Congress has any intention of doing that. And even the two presidential contenders, I believe one study, I believe it was the Penn Wharton study, showed Trump will, his spending plans will increase the deficit by $5 trillion, and Harris was, I think, $2 trillion or $3 trillion. So they both are going to significantly increase the deficit. But anyway, CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, on their 10-year plan, they show, I believe it's $54 trillion being the cumulative deficit 10 years down the road, which is roughly the $2 trillion a year that they're projecting were exceeding the tax collections. And interest at that point will be the number one largest category of the U.S. debt. So anyway, when we come back tomorrow, I'm going to talk more about, well, what do we do as individuals? How can we more closely direct what happens to us in this incredible spending and debt scenario that will no doubt raise our tax bills at some point? It's just math. And it's not Democrat, it's not Republican. At some point, we will no longer be able to borrow as easily or as cheaply. And it's probably when we run out of the discretionary, the remaining discretionary component of the budget. And again, that's estimated by most economists to be in the 2028, 29, or 2030 timeframe. So we'll talk about getting your pre-tax retirement funds over to Roth, and in that context, being able to avoid tax for the rest of your life if you get started now. And it can be done in pieces. You don't have to roll everything over to Roth in one fell swoop. We want to manage the tax brackets that get applied to the extent we can. And the tax brackets should be thought of, the current tax brackets are the lowest in most of our lifetimes. They're on sale. Anyway, the show's coming to an end here. I hear the music. Let's circle back tomorrow at 11 a.m. and we'll talk more about the Roth conversion and why and how you can undertake that transaction. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.